This is MuggleCast, episode 19, for December 11th, 2005. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another fine edition of MuggleCast. This is the show where we bring you the latest in Harry Potter news, theories, discussions, wrapping paper, Grammy nominations, MP3 players. It's all right here, bundled into a little hour of your time. I'm Andrew Sims.
I'm Benji.
I'm Kevin Steck.
I'm Eric Skull.
And I'm Laura Thompson.
We have a lot for you this week, but before we get started, first let's go to Micah to fill us in on the past week's top news stories.
Thanks, Andrew. What's with this newsroom being decorated in all Hufflepuff stuff? Anyway, the new J.K. Rowling and Stephen Fry interview, which aired at 9 a.m. Sunday morning on BBC Radio 4, is now available. There's also a transcript posted for those of you who are interested. In it, the Harry Potter author discussed the end of the final novel, saying, "Yes, I do know what's going to happen. Well, I'm glad somebody does. And occasionally I get cold shivers when someone guesses at something that's very close. And then I panic and I think, oh, is it very obvious? And then someone says something that's so off the wall that I think, no, it's clearly not that obvious." Bloomsbury has announced the release date for the UK paperback version of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, June 23rd, 2006. We'll keep you posted on any news regarding the US version. Staying with releases, Blockbuster has become the second to report a release date of April 4th, 2006 for Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire on DVD. We'll keep you posted as April gets closer. For new interviews, pictures, and video clips, be sure to check out MobileNet's main page. Warner Brothers Pictures has launched their official awards site. On it, you'll find information about the categories for each film WB is supporting in their campaigns. There are synopses, downloadable JPEGs, and clips for our award hopefuls. Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire has been nominated in several categories, including Best Picture and Best Visual Effects. And as promised, our Goblet of Fire interviews that we filmed with the Leaky Cauldron on the red carpet in New York City are now available in iPod video format. It has been added to our MuggleCast feed and only available in iTunes. And speaking of MuggleCast, our weekly Harry Potter podcast has been nominated for Best Podcast at the Weblog Awards. So, if you want me to stay employed, then please go vote for us. Finally, Jim Dale, narrator of the U.S. audiobooks, has been nominated for a Grammy Award in the category of Best Spoken Word Album for Children for his work on Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. Dale previously won a Grammy in 2000 for The Goblet of Fire. The awards will take place in Los Angeles on February 8th and will be broadcast later that day. Jim got himself into a little bind last week in a recent interview. He commented on J.K. Rowling, saying she's lived with Harry Potter so long, she really wants to kill him off. Based on this, hordes of media sources, mainly tabloids, printed articles claiming J.K. does indeed want to kill off the boy wizard. This, of course, is untrue. Dale was merely expressing his opinion. But Jim, buddy, probably not the best choice of words. That's all the news for this December 11, 2005 edition of MuggleCast. Back to you guys.
All right, thank you, Micah. Now, before we get started here, well, we've already started. What am I saying? Ben's got a top 10 list for us, right, Ben?
Of course, this is everyone's favorite part of the show. Mm-hmm. By everyone's favorite.
Right.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, the top 10 reasons for why you wonder if there is such a thing as over-speculation. Number 10, your favorite page on MuggleNet besides MuggleCast is The Little Things. Number 9, you wonder from book 3 about the prospect of being frightened to death because it kept seeing death omens and think about what would happen if you convinced yourself they weren't real. Number 8, you want to hit your head on something whenever someone says, just speculation. Number 7, you take everything on DumbledoreIsNotDead.com and further analyze it. That's even possible. Number 6,
no.
You have written, made analysis of, and generally over-speculated on seemingly minor topics such as how Dementors are created. Number 5, that would be, you notice the smallest details in the books, yet completely fail to notice the Ron and Hermione shipping until very late. Number 4, you try to uncover all the characteristics, all the characters' Patronuses, and do conclude that Mr. Weasley's is indeed a rubber duck, and have a complete list why. Number 4, you try to find out the psychological issues Ben has that makes him able to perform a proper British accent. Oh, what's up with that one? I can do a British accent fine. What, Jamie?
Keep going.
Number two, you developed a theory on why Andrew insists on saying, yeah, yeah, all right, all right. And the number one reason.
I have my own theory.
You wonder if there is such thing as over-speculation. You wonder if Micah had a troubled childhood because his last name means fir tree in German and is used in a Christmas song. Oh, Tannenbaum. Tannenbaum. Okay.
Okay.
So, if you're disappointed with this week's top 10 list, have no fear. Send in your own top 10 list to bennettstaff.mugglenet.com or you can select my name from the contact form. Also, thanks to Sarah for sending in this week's list. So, keep them coming. We want some good ones next week. Something interesting. Get down. Come up with your own top 10 list.
Does this mean I overanalyze things? I mean, I have a theory on why Andrew said yeah so many times. I think it was because he was excited. I don't know. I think I better consult.
Theory is because I had always felt like, with the gaps where people were just cheering, I thought it was weird that nobody was.
I
thought
basically.
You know that we should have filled it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Now they were already read that.
I don't think.
But anyway,
you need
moving
Andrew
on
to
from
rev
that.
Them up.
Yeah.
Okay.
All you got to do is walk in the building and it's like, woo. No, but anyway, moving on to a couple of announcements. It's a new month, which means it's another vote for you guys to put in over at Podcast Alley. I didn't really want to ask this week because
we ask every week.
I'm checking right now. We're number five, and that's without begging you guys to do it. So, I don't want to be Dawn and Drew's show because I'm a heavy duty listener of the show, and they're all excited that they're number one. But I don't want to take it away.
Just vote for us.
We don't care.
No, I really don't.
Humble Andrew, humble. that's an oxymoron. Oh, come on. Those two words do not belong together in the same sentence. You can't be serious.
Okay.
Neither do Ben and Emma, but that doesn't stop you, Ben.
Oh.
Everybody knows she loves me.
Once we get up to number two, that's when you guys can stop voting for us. Everyone pretty much knows that we use Skype. And especially lately, we've been getting a huge amount of friend requests. Not that we don't like you guys, but we...
Please stop.
If you notice that... yeah.
We can't do the show.
I tried to put it the nice way, but...
Oh, so far this
you
show.
Guys, stop calling them. You can call me all you want.
Okay.
The times of midnight and 6 a.m. because I'm sleeping. And if my speakers go off.
You're not.
Sometimes.
And you know, people of the world, don't call him on Skype Sundays between like 3 and 8 p.m. because that's when he edits the show.
when he does.
If you call me, you will get... Okay, you think a Dementor's bad... Think Lord Voldemort's back? You haven't felt the wrath of Ben Shear.
the wrath of Ben sounds like a strange Star Trek spinoff with Benjamin as Spock.
I had an announcement here. So this may be a minor steal from Pottercast, but I think it's a good idea too. I want you guys to write songs about MuggleCast. Make it a parody to any Christmas song, to any song there is out there. No, absolutely. Any song, as long as it's appropriate.
And not O Tannenbaum.
Yeah, because we have that. We already have that one covered. But what we're saying here is you need to sing the song, record yourself singing it, you and your friends, whatever, and send it in to us, and then we'll listen to it and play it on the show and make it funny as possible because then you're more likely to actually get it on the show. And for the Christmas episode, Andrew and I will be singing the Harry Potter remix you guys come up with for U2's City of Blinding Lights. So someone at least write a version of this. Andrew and I will sing the regular version, just so you know how, just to give a model for it. But yeah, look ugly in a photograph.
I think you should skip this.
Skip this section. And you should send all of your doctor bills to bennettstaff.mugglenet.com when your ears start bleeding.
Ouch.
Yes. Okay. And additionally, you know what, guys? The 12 something of MuggleCast would be cool.
That'd be cool.
Yeah,
like a 12. Pains of hearing Ben Chain's voice or something.
Everybody send him hate mail. Spam his account with hate mail. But seriously, someone, seriously though, write a song about me and Emma. That would be my Christmas present.
Wow.
Deck the halls. That'll be just as successful as making you a fan.
Deck the halls with Ben and Emma. La 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 la. Or clear the halls.
Yeah. But okay, moving on. Okay. Yeah. I promise people these announcements are going to be shorter.
They can fast forward, Andrew.
Any last thoughts, Ben?
Send me your song parodies.
Okay, thank you.
Wow.
Let's see. What else? Ooh. Well, we announced this on our fan forum. Well, I mentioned it on our fan forums, MuggleCastFan.net, which is an excellent resource for the MuggleCast fan. But we are working on a brand new MuggleCast website that is going to expand on everything that we have right now at MuggleCast.com.
It's going to revolutionize the world.
It is.
It is. Guys, it's going to have its own poll, okay? What now? But we're going to expand a lot. We're going to have a lot of FAQ articles. We're going to have a how-to section on making your own podcast because we get that email all the time. So it'll be great. So look for that in 1 to 2 weeks. Then also some big news for all of the British listeners and all the British fans. Jamie is going to be coming back.
Yay!
I don't think it's only for the British fans.
I was going to say the American fangirls would probably appreciate
him a lot more. Jamie has quite the fan.
Yes.
So.
We get complaints every week when we hear that he's not on, and you know we
want him back.
We don't mind him.
Yeah.
We understand.
Yeah, on the
people.
On the fan listing, like the people who say they like him the best are like only 20 behind me. I'm like, what the hell? I've been on so many more shows. But
Eric always tries to be the best. But anyway, Jamie, he's been busy with college. He'll be on his winter break in just a few days, and so he'll be on a few shows, including next week's. Hopefully.
Yeah,
no guarantees.
Yeah, don't.
But
no promises.
It's like 90%
don't
chance.
Get their hook. Who was that? Okay, didn't someone one time say that Jamie and I were both going to return 1 week and we?
Oh yeah, that was me.
Who was that? I don't remember. Who was that?
That was me. Yeah. I don't know. You guys. You said you would be on.
I was on actually, and then you guys re-recorded the show
without telling me. But it was excellent
and then,
without you. So,
oh, ouch.
Yeah.
So send your hate mail.
Offense, but
anyway,
I love
guys.
Ben.
And then I'll
staffed up. My
any more announcements, Andrew?
Yes. One final announcement. We are starting a new contest this week, a Goblet of Fire soundtrack contest where 15 lucky people who listen to the show will be winning one Goblet of Fire soundtrack. All the great songs you heard in the movie are now in this one fine CD.
Confetify!
Woo! The CD is actually... this contest is a pretty fun one. We're going to start it this week. It's going to run through next week. It ends on the release of episode 20. Now, here's what you have to do. In one moment, I'm going to play 5 songs... 3-second clips of 5 songs. You have to email us with each song's title in the correct order of the order that they were played.
We'll give you a hint. They'll all be YouTube
and then,
songs.
No, they're not YouTube songs. They're from the soundtrack. You got to name all 5. And then email your contest entries to mcsongs@staff.mugglenet.com. Now, here are the 5 songs. Number 2. Number 3. Number 4. And number 5. Okay, so there you have it once again. Email them to MC Songs. What did we say? MC Songs?
MC Songs.
Yeah, email them to mcsongs@staff.mugglenet.com. And then the winners will be announced on our Christmas special, which will be episode 21. Mm-hmm. And the winners will be chosen randomly out of the people who email in with the correct answers. So good luck, everyone. So with that, now it's time to move on to our main discussion of the week, continuing our continuing series. Wow, great wording there. Whoever writes these scripts are really bad.
Micah. Micah, are you getting
we're going to get
that back, Micah. Micah's actually transcribing this as we go.
Yeah. We're going to continue our regular discussion on a specific character in depth. And this week, as promised, is Severus Snape.
Can I read information about him? Can I read about him?
Sure, Ben. Tell us all about Mr. Snape.
Okay, Mr. Snape was born on January 9th, 1959. His mother is Eileen Prince, hence the name Half-Blood Prince, and he is half-blood. His father was Tobias Snape. We found out a lot of his information, Half-Blood Prince. We don't know if he has any children. Let's see, what else do we have here? He's Harry's least favorite professor. He's a real...
Really?
Sounds a lot like me.
I disagree with that, Ben.
Let's see, he has a hook nose. He was a former Death Eater, or is he a Death Eater now? That's the question everyone's dying to know. Is Severus Snape good or bad? That's probably what our discussion is going to center around today. But that's pretty much all there is to know about Severus Snape. There's information, this is from, once again, from hp-lexicon.org, and you can go there and look at his information about the etymology behind his name and stuff, but it's not worth
reading. Of course,
here,
Eric wants to start the conversation, so.
No, Kevin,
Eric, is Snape good or bad? I'm really dying to know. What do you think, Eric?
Well,
just tell me.
Benjamin, I just thought it would be nice to inform the public that we did do quite a lot of talking about Snape in the first, I'd say, 8 or 9 episodes of MuggleCast. Was it predominantly, we'd just come off book 6, and I remember we had to ask the fans to stop sending us Snape questions, you know, and stuff like that. So we actually did talk a lot about Dumbledore and whether Snape's good or evil in the first, I'd say, 7 or 8 episodes of MuggleCast. So if you wanted to review
but
those.
But now's a good time to, I think, to summarize all that information.
Yeah, sure. You know? I mean, we can do that. I mean, I'm comfortable going back to that subject now. I mean, I think we had a nice break.
Okay, so now that's been established. Is he good or bad?
I think he's good.
Well, I feel the same
way.
I'm on the fence.
I think. No, I have an idea. Everyone's talking about whether Snape is good or bad. Have you ever thought about maybe Snape's working for himself? You know?
I've thought about that before.
And
Snape's concerned about
how would
Snape.
He benefit though?
Because he's part of the good empire, the evil empire, so he basically gets the best of both worlds. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, J.K. Rowling has made the distinction between Order of the Phoenix and Death Eaters. Do you really think she'd go midway?
Well, that's true, but is there a gray area
I really don't
the good
think
side
so.
And the dark side. Is there a sort of area where it's muddled?
Well, Ben, I think it's a gray area for every individual person, but both, you know, everybody still chooses a side, what side they're closer to, I think.
And I'm sure if we, after, say, it's a year after book 7's out, if we look back into the previous books, I'm sure there's some foreshadowing that we're missing right now about the real identity of Snape.
J.K. Rowling puts stuff in there all the time that she puts right in front of us just for the point of laughing when we find out it was right in front of us the whole time.
And here's a question, guys. Did you know Chamber of Secrets was originally going to be called Half-Blood Prince? And it was going to be
about
that.
That's true.
And then she realized that she couldn't fit that in, but then that really shocks me because how could we know all this about Snape up front? And then she decides, no, I'm not going to tell him until the 7th book now.
So, do you guys think she was planning on killing Dumbledore?
No,
too?
I think they were going to. She was going to play it as a like subplot.
So another subplot.
Yeah, where it was like a rolling plot, and then come book 6 or book 7, she was going to kill Dumbledore using that subplot.
One thing about his allegiance in the first book is simply. Well, his allegiance in the series. If he really turns out to be a bad guy, the whole point of suspecting him in book 1 would be crap. I'd never read book 1 again because here they
right. The first book, it's sort of juvenile in the way that it seems like Snape is the red herring. It feels like you're watching Scooby-Doo, you know. There's what's his name? Fred is always saying, "Oh, I know it's Red Herring. I know it's him," you know. And Harry keeps saying, "I know it's Snape. I just know it is." And then it turns out not to be Snape. And then they keep suspecting Snape. And then finally it is, but at the same time, is it really, you know?
Ben, you watched Scooby-Doo?
I did. I used to.
Yeah, but I think that's one of the points people have been making, that she has been playing it up as though he's always the scapegoat, like he's always a person who does something bad, and then it turns out that he doesn't. And then the one time he does do something bad, you're sitting there wondering, was it truly him, you know, killing Dumbledore for the mere fact of killing him, or was it some agreement that he made with Dumbledore in the past?
Well, Snape had no choice but to kill Dumbledore because he made the unbreakable vow, which in my mind is pretty certain that's what it was about, because Draco's task was to kill Dumbledore, and when he couldn't, Snape had the choice, well, I do this or die. And
you know, I think, Ben, that's a really important point to make. I'm sure we might have said it, but the fact that he had to do it could have been a good reason for him to be able to. People who think Snape is bad, they said, how could he, you know, you really have to mean the death curse, so how could he possibly do that if he were good? But I think it's just a matter of having to do it, and much
out of
like
necessity, yeah.
Right, much like Harry and his Patronus in Prisoner of Azkaban, he knew he could do it because he had to do it to save him in the past, who was also in the future.
Well, you guys, speaking of foreshadowing, Micah showed me a really cool editorial by Kirsty E.R., basically comparing Snape to the riddle that the Sphinx gave Harry in Goblet of Fire. It's fairly interesting, actually. Basically, if you read the first line, it talks about the person who lives in secrets and tells naught but lies. She thinks that the Sphinx was referring to Snape being this person, obviously not literally, but as foreshadowing on Joe's part. And that the middle of middle and end of end refers to mending relationships, and that the middle in that sentence literally means relationships that Snape has to mend in the middle of the series, which would be with Voldemort and the Death Eaters, and that end literally refers to the end of the series, which could possibly be Harry, assuming he is a good guy.
I don't know, in my mind, that connection seems a little far out there.
I don't know, though. What I do want to say,
I think it,
yeah,
go ahead.
I'll tell you one thing. That Sphinx riddle didn't seem to me, now whatever it was, and it was a lot of things, I don't think it seemed like a spider to me. I actually think that whole riddle sounds more like a Dementor than a spider.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't want to kiss it, and, you know, it's, and it's, so, so
exactly.
I knew it
exactly.
had to be
That's
something, I mean, a spider, I was ready for Harry to get tromped on. When I read him say
yeah.
spider, I was like, okay, good, I'm going to read like a, you know, but she didn't do anything. She was like, correct. Like, how was he supposed
yeah.
to?
Yeah, and that's actually a point that Kirsty made, was that at the end it talks about, now tell me what is a creature you would not want willing to be kiss to kiss, excuse me. If this is referring to Snape, what if he were to have his soul sucked out by a Dementor? Dementor's kiss.
But I mean, yeah, so I mean, I don't even know if that's Snape. I think that's really clever. I like the, I'm gonna read that editorial.
That's a good analogy, I think.
I don't think it's the spider. I was like, it has to be something besides that, because that's just.
Well, she also made comparisons between Snape and spiders, because we've seen several comparisons between Snape and bats, leading people to believe he was a vampire.
Yeah, what I want to know is what's up with that. Like,
yeah.
If
I sort of had... Sorry, we keep cutting into each other. But
no problem.
She talks about Snape being referenced as a spider. For instance, he lives at Spinner's End. And in
Ooh.
Order of the Phoenix, during the pensive scene where Harry is... I lost my train of thought. Anyway, where Harry is...
Yet you continued your sentence. How does that work?
Yes, shut up. No. Okay, Harry is basically viewing his parents in the whole Snape's worst memory scene. And Snape is described as... being twitchy, like a spider. So, I sort of had a spin-off theory of...
Spin-off?
Yeah. of Kirsty's theory. Right after Harry passes the Sphinx, he runs into an Acromantula. And I believe that the Triwizard Cup represents Harry's goal in the maze, which was to defeat the maze. And I think if Snape... or the Acromantula is representing Snape, that it's possible that the Triwizard Cup could represent Voldemort, being Harry's goal to defeat him. Now, we know that the Acromantula injured Harry, which made getting to the cup more difficult, which I can see as a comparison of Snape killing Dumbledore, which makes Harry's quest to defeat Voldemort more difficult. However, we see that Harry does make it to the cup, and he does survive, so it could be early foreshadowing to show us that Harry will defeat Voldemort and survive.
Well, I like the connections you drew there, but I don't know if it's really analogous to, you know, I think... I'll probably end up eating my words with this. I wouldn't be a bit surprised, but I just don't know that. I mean, it seems like a connection, but I don't know if it's being stretched a bit.
It's true.
Oh, it could be, but see, actually, we as Harry Potter fans stretch so many things.
Yeah. No, but Ben, do you remember in Prisoner of Azkaban, they're actually saying that. Remember when Ron is when they're all writing, doing their homework or something about trials and suffering and being happy and stuff. All that stuff comes true in the.
Oh yeah, when Ron starts talking about the fires and all that and all the bad things that are going to happen, and then Harry.
Yeah, and
gets
all that stuff comes true
then,
in the book.
Yeah.
It seems like because like each of those followed the. That was in Goblet of Fire. Then each of the tasks.
Didn't Ron say something? That I'm going to save a friend from drowning, or I'm going to drown next week, and then Harry saved him, or whatever.
Yeah.
That was pretty interesting.
Yeah, so there's actually, that wouldn't be the first time that something long drawn out was, like, put in. My question is, I think there might be something more about Snape in the end of the book to begin with, about how, you know, Voldemort's going on about his faithful servant at Hogwarts and one who's left forever and all that other stuff, that I think the whole end of the book probably has a lot more Snape in it. I think it's definitely possible.
Galadriel had a really good theory about this. She wrote the Ultimate Official Guide, The Mysteries of Harry Potter, all those books. And in Galadriel's book, she talks about how who was the chosen one, who was the faithful servant. I mean, not the chosen one, but who was the faithful servant at Hogwarts, and who was the coward that ran, and what's the third one? I'm a poor excuse for a Harry Potter fan.
Just everybody's dying to know, is Snape good, or is he bad? Or what about this? Ooh, new theory popped into my mind. What if Snape has a twin? One's good, and one's bad.
The evil twin.
Yeah.
No, I think he should take responsibility for his or his own twin's actions.
God, I'm like, so good.
Or maybe like a little Snape that he can wreak havoc. Little mini.
It's all figured
Snape.
Out. I have it. Snape has a twin. That's it. Just look at the fan art pictures. Don't they all look different from one another? I think he has like 40 brothers.
And twins look
Andrew.
Different from each other?
It's different artists' interpretations.
Oh,
that explains it. Yeah.
There's different artists. There's not, so the artists aren't like twins, so they
okay, well,
going back to what Laura
let's do some comparing here.
Okay,
what's the first thing that comes to mind? He's
well,
into
hang,
the
okay.
dark arts.
Yeah.
Making him loyal to Voldemort. You would think.
Well, making him
yeah.
Good guys have to know the dark arts too. I mean, as Slughorn had said, the best wizards still kind of are interested.
Of course, because how do you know your enemy if you don't know what they're doing?
Exactly. So just because he's into the dark arts, I think that gives him more of a reason to be more knowledgeable and be more mysterious and stuff.
I think his original motivations for going into the dark arts were those of being on Voldemort's side. You know, like, they weren't the... Yeah. His motivations now aren't what they used to be. His intentions,
I feel that way. Laura mentioned Spinner's End and Snape being compared to a spider like that. I think that's cool. Also, Spinner's End, I think, has something to do with him creating a web of deceit, you know, a tangled web of, you know, we don't know what side he's on. And things like that. And that could be the spider reference. You know, just that he's this tangled web
Definitely.
Of people who are, you know, who think he's good, who think he's bad.
Okay, well, the one reason, hear me out here. The one reason I think Snape is a good guy is because he absolutely has to be, because he's been around Harry for all these years.
why couldn't he have just zapped Harry once? And what happened in Half-Blood Prince was at the end, after Dumbledore gets killed by Snape, Harry's unfrozen, and he starts chasing after Snape. And he tries to use the Cruciatus Curse on him, and is unsuccessful. And Snape's yelling at him, "You idiot, just go," and all this stuff. And at that moment, why couldn't Snape have gone Petrificus Totalus, and then went and grabbed Harry,
take him to the Dark Lord,
and then zap, zoom, bam-o.
That's one of the reasons that I'm on the fence.
Guys, I have a great theory. I have a great, great, great theory. Okay, you guys, now Ben said, I think Snape kind of at least described himself well enough for Bellatrix at why he didn't kill Harry yet, but at the end of Book 6 you said, and, you know, he says, no, he's the Dark Lord's, when he's chasing him across the ground, and he should have taken Harry away. Do you think, similarly to the Pettigrew life debt, that Pettigrew is Harry, do you think Harry owes Snape now for saving his life like that?
No, because I think with a life debt, it's something has to be blatantly saved their lives. I think Snape would have to zap one of the Death Eaters after they said half of the Death Curse or something.
Yeah,
because he didn't really save
exactly.
his life. He just told him to turn and go.
He just chose not to kill him.
No, but still, that was all it was with Wormtail. I mean, they were kind of pointing their wands at him,
yeah,
and Harry said
no. Wormtail's also the reason that Harry's parents
and
died.
Harry wasn't the one who was going to be doing the killing.
And also, they said they were going to kill him together, and then Harry said, "Don't kill him," you know. And Half-Blood Prince, Snape really didn't say. Snape said, "Turn and go. He's the Dark Lord." So it wasn't like he was saving his life. He was just delaying the moment
I
when he was
get
going
it,
to be killed
Ben,
by Voldemort.
Fine.
Or so he thinks.
Crush my theory. Whatever. I'm gonna go and cry now. Okay. I get the point.
Three
you don't
on
like
one.
Me. You don't like me. It's fine.
You know what? Barty Crouch Jr. is a good guy.
He is. No, actually, okay, I'm going to talk about that for 1 second. If you look in the books, he's actually really a good guy. And it was a surprise because I had forgotten all the good stuff pointing to him in the books when I said that. But if he doesn't really seem evil in the trial before he gets put in Azkaban. And when he comes out, I think, is when he's really evil. But also, the fact that he's soul-sucked by a Dementor, just says that we may never know stuff about him that could have come forward if he were still alive.
Yeah.
As his past and stuff. So I think there's a good margin for him being good. But back to Snape. But thank you for bringing that up, Ben. It made me feel better about you crushing my theory. So, okay, what else? What's up?
Do you think Snape's a good guy, Eric? Do you think
I forget. Guys.
I wouldn't say he's a good guy, though. Just because
he's
good in the sense that he's on the right side doesn't mean he's a good guy, you know?
He's still...
Yeah, just like Sirius said, there's no defining line between Death Eaters and, you know, good people. It's the same
exactly.
way.
Exactly.
On the other side.
I mean, if you know, Bellatrix was on the Order of the Phoenix, doesn't mean she's a good person. She just supports them.
Definitely.
Oh, I have a great contribution. I'm sorry, Andrew. Go ahead.
I was just reading through some quotes that J.K. Rowling has said about Snape. And in the majority of them, she's always reiterating how horrible Snape is. And in one quote, calling him deeply horrible. Can he be on this good side while still being this deeply horrible?
I have a reason for that.
Quote unquote.
First of all, it's J.K. Rowling, and second of all, I think that absolutely he can be.
You know what? That's a good point.
My
Ben.
Point was that she kept reiterating it. She kept saying
he's
a bad person.
Her point is that Snape is
just because he has a nasty personality doesn't mean he has to be on the side of Voldemort.
Nobody said it was personality.
But he was picked on. By Harry's father. He's not going to, you know, let that slide. He has a grudge, and, you know, the best of people can hold grudges and can be pretty mean, I guess. I mean, I'm not saying he's a good guy. He's not. But I see that as a flaw. I still think there might be good. And are you guys familiar with Occam's Razor?
No.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, okay, Kevin he's a college boy.
Yeah.
Occam's Razor is a postulation, if you will. It's a postulate thingy that states that one should not increase, beyond what is necessary, the number of entities required to explain anything. In short, it means the shortest answer is the best answer.
Well, and
Eric would learn from that.
Yeah, you should take advice. No. Okay. Guys, besides that, the point is, people are using this to say that Snape is bad. And they say that, okay, so, all right. Now, Snape is bad, or he's good, but he tricked Dumbledore, but he tricked this, but, you know, he's tricking Voldemort, and he's going on both sides, and and they make it out to seem that Snape being a good guy is such a long, you know, drawn-out thing that it's just, you know, Occam's Razor says we should make it out like he's bad, and in reality, I just think that there's just enough explanation required for him to truly be bad, which includes the fact that he's been proven good, you know, all throughout book one, all throughout, you know, the whole series and all these different events.
Yeah, but at the same time, we know J.K. Rowling, and she tends to hide things in her books. So, typically, with her at least, things don't go according to Occam's Razor.
Oh, well, yeah, so that's just more proof that he's...
For example, look at this show. Look at all the things we talk about. Look at all the analyzing we do. Occam's Razor, whatever postulization it is ridiculous because we come up with long, drawn-out answers because the thing that's not true about that is that, well, I think it means, like, the simplest answer is usually the correct answer, but at the same time, we have to provide proof for what we're saying. We can't just make flawed assumptions based off nothing.
So let's go around the table before we get the voicemails. In one word, Eric.
One word, Eric.
Explain. Explain. Say if you think he is good or bad. Ben. Or both.
You say Ben?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Laura.
Dunno.
Kevin.
Good.
Eric.
Loyal. I'm not going to say loyal to Dumbledore or loyal to Voldemort. I'm just going to say loyal.
I'll take that as a both.
And let people figure it out.
And yourself?
I'd like to think good. I'll say good because it would end up as a not nice.
You're just going with
plot.
Kevin and I.
No.
You're joining us.
Thinking about book 7.
He's a trend
no,
follower.
No, no. Obviously, cool people say good. So.
Guys,
me and Eric got cool.
Hey guys, at the end of the book of book one, The Man with Two Faces, when Harry is confronting Quirrell, and he says, "You," and Quirrell smiled, and he says, "Me, I wonder whether I'd be meeting you here." Harry says, "But I thought Snape." And he goes, "Severus? Yes, Severus does seem the type, doesn't he?" So, and then he goes on, "So useful to have him swooping on like an overgrown bat." So, he says, "Next to him, who would suspect..." You know, before stuttering, "Professor Quirrell." But I think it really, that emphasizes, too, the fact that Snape really does seem like a bad guy, but really he's just clouding the pool of potentials. And, I think that Quirrell really used that to emphasize how, you know, next to Snape, he could blend in with the good guys very easily. So... Even though I think he's distinguishing Snape as a good guy.
There's a lot of deception going on in these books.
Yeah.
Constant vigilance! Constant vigilance!
My solution is every week,
Ben.
We'll just have Joe on the show, and we won't even have to have these podcasts anymore.
Not that she'd answer the questions, as said before.
Good thing Joe doesn't update her site anymore, because otherwise we'd run out of stuff to talk about.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's get to the voicemails now.
Hi, I'm Katharina from Vienna, Austria. I really love your podcast. I've got a question concerning Harry and Snape. In the 6th book, when Harry was chasing Snape on the grounds of Hogwarts, why did he try the Cruciatus curse on him and not the Avada Kedavra? For me, it would be clear that Harry would just kill him after all he had done. Or is it that Harry is not powerful enough to cast such a spell? Just tell me what you think. Thank you.
The central theme of this book is that the power Harry has that Voldemort knows not is love. And I don't think Harry has too much love in him to be able to kill someone right now. I mean, eventually he's going to have to find a way to do it to Voldemort in book 7 if he wants to defeat Voldemort. But the problem is right now, he doesn't have, as Bellatrix told him in Book 5, you have to really mean it. You have to really mean to torture the person. And right now, he hasn't developed enough hatred, enough, he hasn't practiced the spell really enough to be able to actually torture the two people he's tried it on. He tried it on Bellatrix in Book 5 and then Snape in Book 6. I think that he would be capable of performing the death curse, but I don't know if he really wanted to try it because he's never really killed before, and he's a loving person.
You think that he would use the death curse?
Well, he's going to have to.
Will he?
Well, he's going to have to find someone to kill Voldemort unless he uses one of the top 100 ways. I can see Joe barring one of them. Barring one of our contest winners.
I just ask because it seemed as though Voldemort wasn't hesitating to cast it at Dumbledore, but Dumbledore was, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It seems as though there's more to the death curse than we know, and there are better ways to do it as someone who
maybe it's something similar to drinking unicorn blood, because when you drink unicorn blood, you have that half-life, a cursed life, but then all the auras would be doomed too. So I don't know. Dumbledore may have been hesitant to do it, but I think the reason he was hesitant was because of the fact he knew that Harry had to be the one to do it, and that if he tried anything, it wasn't going to work anyways. That Harry had to be the one to confront Voldemort in the end because of what the prophecy said.
Yeah, I think Harry is a lover, not a fighter. But by that, I
Ginny
also
knows
mean
what you're talking about.
Yeah. He's not a killer. He really, really isn't. I think there's several other book series as well, including just Narnia, which I saw tonight. But I don't want to talk about that because you guys are going to do that next week. But even in Narnia, like, the hero is given a sword and he really doesn't use it until he absolutely has to. And, you know, he doesn't just go wield it around and kill people for target practice, you know. And I think Harry is definitely one of those, you know, one of those people who doesn't kill. And it's brought up, you know.
Right, right. But Harry has to make sure that, using the sword analogy, to keep his sword sharp, so to speak, so that he knows he needs to practice the death curse, practice it on pixies or something, just so that he knows how to do it when it comes time for the final battle.
Well, like you were saying, Bellatrix was telling him you have to really have enough hate in yourself to be able to cast an unforgivable curse, and I think Harry knows that. Also, I think part of the reason he didn't use the killing curse is because in Book 5, when Sirius dies, Harry is described as wanting to track down Bellatrix and make her feel the pain that she has given Harry, and I think Harry wanted Snape to feel the pain. I don't think he wanted him to get a quick way out. He wanted him to suffer.
That too.
And in court and trial, like, a lot of the times, especially with, like, Batman and X-Men and, you know, all the superheroes and stuff, they turn them over to the cops instead of killing them because, you know, that's justice. And, you know, they have this big emphasis on justice being done to them, and death is the easy way out. And I think one of the things that the bad guys definitely capitalize on is the term or the sentence, the phrase, "You should have killed me when you had the chance." Because that's just plain wrong. You know, they shouldn't have killed him. And I believe Dumbledore says it. You know, Voldemort says it to Dumbledore. And the thing is that they're drawing on this. It's love. And, you know, they aren't killing them. And then the bad guys make it seem like it's the weak thing
to
do.
When you think about it, Eric, it's not. And this is sort of contradicting what I said a few minutes ago, but I just came to my mind, is that when it comes down to it, we're going to have to see some way to kill Voldemort other than using the killing curse, because we saw in Book 4 what happens with Priori and Cantatum, and
right,
it would just be the regurgitation of the previous spells that the wand committed. And so if Harry's going to have to find some other way, and...
Well, that's only when you cast the spell at the same time.
Right, both of them have to be ready. I doubt... You know, if you can block the spell, if you know you can block the spell, but just by throwing up Expelliarmus, then that's what Harry's going to do in order to prevent himself from being killed.
That's true.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty much what happens. It was emphasizing the connection between them and the fact that they had the same wand. So, and I think we answered this in a voicemail, like one of the earlier shows, about how Voldemort might want a new wand or something, since theirs can't work together. I think there will have to be another way for Harry to kill him.
I don't know. We'll find out.
I don't know. What scares me, even though this is Snapecast, is how close Harry and Voldemort are even now.
Do you think so?
That's for another. I think they are incredibly alike. Every
oh, okay. I thought you meant in strength. And see, the whole problem I've been seeing is that, and it's emphasized even by the point that Harry can't really cast these high-level dark magic spells, is that he always seems to be a little too weak than the competition. And he always seems to just squeak by with his life, kind of thing.
Oh, and we've said this on the earlier shows, too. He's
pretty much exactly.
Screwed,
and, seems like he has to do a lot of learning before he even attempts to face Voldemort. Because the last thing we want as fans is to see him kill Voldemort out of luck. You know?
I was actually reading a very interesting fan fiction story the other day in which he's doing these studies about things, and he gets some war guide, and he realizes that it's time that he has to confront Voldemort, that he has to confront the enemy, because in the previous books, the confrontations has always basically been set up by Voldemort. Voldemort had the portkey. Voldemort led Harry down into the little dungeon place where the Miravir said. Voldemort led Harry to the Chamber of Secrets. Then we saw in book 5, Voldemort gave Harry the vision of Sirius being tortured and led him to the Department of Mysteries, where there was a confrontation there. Yeah. And Harry has to finally set it up this time around if he wants to have a shot at beating Voldemort. It has to be on his terms.
He also has to hit the books.
Yeah. Rather than Voldemort actually, you know, setting it up again and then having the upper hand, because he's going to know the terrain, he's going to know what's going on, and Harry will have to reverse the tides this time. And
you know what, guys? Unfortunately, this wasn't even really a high-emphasis Snape voicemail, so we should talk about Snape.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the next one.
Hey, guys. This is Mark from New York. Great job with the show. You know, I honestly can't think of a time when we have seen Professor Snape give a Patronus. So what do you think his Patronus would be? Also, we've never seen that he's an Animagus either. I mean, like, everybody seems to be one. How come he isn't? Or is he? And if he is, what animal do you think he'd transform into? Thanks, guys.
I think that if Snape had a Patronus, he does have a Patronus. I think if he did cast, it'd probably be a bat or a spider. Same thing with Animagus. Focusing just on the tail end of this voicemail quick, I think that I like how they said that basically there is a lot of Animagi and everybody seems to be one. I really feel that it goes along hand with the Polyjuice Potion. You know, everybody is using Polyjuice Potion. And in Book 6, we saw, you know, Crabbe and Goyle turning into girls with Polyjuice Potion. You know, it just, and that's how Barty Crouch's mom bailed him out. You know, it's things like these, I guess, have to be used more than once because it seems like, I don't know. All I know is I like that they really said pretty much everybody's an Animagus and everybody's using Polyjuice Potion. Everybody's doing it. It's a weak point, but it's also
Why couldn't Voldemort take the Polyjuice Potion and turn into Ron and then, while Harry's asleep, kill him? Or why couldn't Harry use a time turner, go back in time and kill Voldemort while he was on the crapper?
Yeah, certain plot points have been certain plot points have been used again and again and again, but I don't know if I mind them. Snape's Patronus, I think,
I would say bad as well.
Especially because...
I agree.
What was happening with that whole vampire thing? She just stopped emphasizing that.
Well, probably because she saw it was off base. It doesn't fit. The way he's described, yes, he could be taken as a vampire, but I don't think she wanted the fans going in that direction with their theories about him. I mean, do you really think that he's a vampire?
That would be just lame.
I think it would be,
Do we know of any vampires?
She hasn't really...
She's never really
emphasized what we know of... what we know about vampires...
It seems like she's like mentioned them in passing before, but no real details.
For example, Quirrell met some in the Black Forest.
What book was that?
Which was kind of like Snape.
It almost sounds like the way she describes them there, that they are kind of like centaurs in the fact that they would want to
live
in a specified natural area.
Like the forest.
That makes any sense.
Yeah.
It's not the vampire, like the Dracula type vampire. I want to suck
you. You mean the
blood.
One on the cereal box?
It's not that type of. Yeah.
Count Chocula. Andrew eats.
Love that guy.
Andrew has Count Chocula for breakfast. I think, yeah, also the blood lollipops and things that were, like, catered to vampires. I think, from what we know about... Now, Snape isn't much of a human,
but I don't think he's... That's a good way of saying
it. He's not much of a guy, but I think he's more human than vampires. You know, he's not a very humane man in the slightest, but I think he's still a guy and still not a vampire. Guys, I have to go.
So, well, I think we wrapped up that voicemail anyway, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so I'm gonna. Can we announce that I'm going to go instead of cutting?
I think you just cut
not
you out.
Existing?
We should just cut you out. Yeah.
Eric at 12:43 in the morning has to go somewhere. So we'll see you later, Eric.
Goodbye.
Spielers unite.
Bye. Adios.
Now moving along, it's not another MuggleCast without Spy on Sparks. We've been doing this for every show since. What, episode 3?
Something like that. Oh, this one,
it's
this
been
one's
a while.
Really a doozy. I talked to Emerson. I talked to Emerson last night, and he told me that he went and had a massive snowball fight with everyone in the Notre Dame dorms. It was like a big fight, a tackling snowball fight, and they were running around and just knocking the snot out of each other. And he said, well, and his quad lost. You hear that? Emerson lost at something, guys.
Oh, my God.
Can you believe it? And so
the apocalypse has come.
I know. This is incredible. When someone once told me that hell would freeze over the day Emerson lost at something. And looks like that day has come. Okay. But back to how we're spying on him this week. He is, once again, he's at a snowball fight / football game on the North Quad. I don't understand how... It could be a snowball fight / football game at the same time. I don't quite get how that works, but...
Because they're throwing snowballs at each other while playing football.
Yeah, and then they randomly tackle each other, and...
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, enough said.
Let's all be happy, and hope Emerson wins this time.
Go North Quad.
But also, the one final thing about Notre Dame / Emerson. Notre Dame made it to... BCS Bowl this year in college football, ranked number 5 in the nation. They're playing Ohio State in the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl. So all of you who plan on watching the game, go out and cheer on Ohio State. Okay.
Thank you, Ben. And now for one of our newest segments on the show. It actually is our newest segment on the show. The Las Vegas Minute, where we spend exactly 1 minute talking about our trip to Las Vegas.
Ready, go.
Okay, so, wow, Las Vegas. It's still so far away.
Did you see how many people are signing up?
Yeah, a ton of people, thanks to us.
Yeah,
Lumos owes us big time.
Yeah,
we're going to go gambling.
But you know what's going to be interesting? How it's going to be all these Harry Potter dorks in one single hotel.
Yeah.
Definitely.
For the most part.
No video cameras allowed.
Of anyone
no
knowing
video
what
cameras.
In?
What? Says who?
I say no video cameras.
I wonder why.
I don't know why not. Yeah.
Yeah, but... so that's going to be really fun. I can't wait for it. We're going to have a sweet.
So, Ben, me and you were talking this week. It seems kind of stupid when you think about it. But you're going to fly out to my house, and then we're going to hit the Jersey Shore.
And then
we're
going
to fly out to Vegas. How crazy is that?
This concludes minute number 2 of the Las Vegas Minute. Bye-bye. Okay, so that's Las Vegas Minute.
I wanted to add something in.
It's getting quicker and quicker every week, guys. That's not our fault. The minute, it's a New York Minute. So it's a Las Vegas Minute. I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
So on that note...
No, we're not leaving yet. We can't leave yet.
Let's hang out for a little bit.
Here's my new segment. it's called Bemma. Bemma's segment. Emma. If you hear this, Emma. If you're Emma's publicist, if you're hearing this, please get her in touch with me. contact me. Then it's
why.mugglenet.com.
Why?
And if
why?
You're Emma's why? Publicist, sink that ship as soon as you can for Emma Sink.
Aw, come on. It's all right.
And restraining order. I'm thinking restraining order.
Please don't get a restraining order on me. Please. Okay, so that
he doesn't stalk you too much.
That concludes session number one of Bema, 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 Bema.
And it's going to be canceled.
Oh, don't cancel Bema. Maybe next week. We'll see what we'll see how things shake down.
Sounds like a really bad soap opera.
Now, this week we're going to premiere a new segment that we're going to test out. I think it'll be cool. It's a fun little game that
I came up with.
Can also
ben
learn
came
a
up
lot
with
from.
It. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben. What are we calling this?
The Dueling Club.
The Dueling Club. The Dueling Club is where we gather to put two characters face to face and see who would win. This week we're going to start off pretty basic. Harry Potter versus Draco Malfoy.
And Harry. Also, go ahead and send in your two characters you'd like to see duke it out. Select Ben from the contact form and enter the subject line, Dueling Club. Okay, sounds good. Okay, Laura, why do you say Harry?
There is a direct example in Order of the Phoenix at the end whenever Harry is basically taunting Draco about his father being in prison, and Draco goes to grab his wand long before Harry does, yet Harry still manages to get his wand out of his robes and pointing at Draco first. He's faster than Draco, he's smarter than Draco, and he's had far more defense experience. Therefore, Harry would win a duel against Draco.
Yeah, I think so too.
I don't know. The thing is that Draco's a pretty salty guy, if you know what I'm saying. I think that if it came down to it, he could put up quite a fight. But then again, what you're saying, Harry survived quite a few incidents in his
I think Draco's
in his
better
lifetime.
With planning. I don't think Draco's good with spontaneous activities. He's more of a plotter.
Right. For example, if Harry was thrown into the situation with Draco, Harry probably can think on his feet better than Draco does, so he could probably win then. But if it came down to it where, say, you know, in book one where they said, let's meet in the trophy room, say it happened again now, and Draco could use sort of a guerrilla warfare tactic where he ambushes Harry and basically sends Harry for a loop.
Yeah, but Harry would think about that in advance.
Yeah, but think about book six. He practically had him.
He outsmarted Harry. He outsmarted everyone.
Yeah, he outsmarted him. Mm-hmm. I think he can think that way. He's good at outsmarting. It's obviously proven in book six, but I mean,
he's cunning. He's cunning.
For example,
he's quick on his feet.
Hold on a second. Look to book six where they're on the train and Draco realizes Harry's in the cart and he freezes him, and then that scene like made me cringe because he stomps on his nose and the blood.
Yeah, but again, he had time to think on that.
It's true.
Because he saw Harry's shoe whenever Harry was climbing up into the rack, so he had all that time that Harry was up there to think about what he was going to do, to plan out how he was going to get back at him.
Right, but that all happened in a matter of seconds, and Draco was able to.
No. Harry was laying up there for a long time while he listened in on their conversation.
Yeah, he was.
That's true, I guess. I don't know. Andrew, do you have any thoughts?
Shot down.
Well, I mean, if you want to be technical about it, what are we defining as a duel? A planned out, already set? Hey,
well, have a
duel,
look at it like
3 p.m.
a Western,
flagpole.
A Western style, you know. Meet me out.
Okay, how about this?
Dawn.
Harry would win because only Voldemort can kill Harry.
Ooh, good point, Kevin. Kevin wins on the technicality there. Yeah. I don't know. That
one's up in the air for me.
That one's off. Yeah, I agree.
You want to do another one real quick?
Yeah, let's do another one.
That was
Hermione.
Fun.
Hermione. And
Emma Watson.
No, Hermione and Draco. Hermione and Draco.
I think it's the same thing there.
I don't think so. I think, to be honest, Draco would win, because Hermione doesn't seem she's book smart, But she doesn't seem one to...
She's not street smart.
Well, the thing that holds me up
is... That's completely untrue. Look to the Department of Mystery scene where Hermione was able to use a lot of wit and...
Yeah, I think if she were to win, it would be out of the knowledge, just out of knowledge of...
Yeah, you know. But I mean, has she ever proven herself under defense against the Dark Arts in a real situation?
I don't know, I think...
The Department of Mysteries is a pretty real situation.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah.
Because she was able to fight pretty well for... being a teenage girl, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing against teenage girls. I love you all.
Yeah, they're better not be. The reason that I'm leaning more towards Hermione on this one is a couple of years ago in an interview, someone asked J.K. Rowling if Harry and Hermione were to duel, who would win? And she said up until halfway through book three, it would have been Hermione. I think if at any point during Hermione's life she's strong enough to defeat Harry... then she's probably strong enough to defeat Draco, too.
I don't know about that, because up until book three, who do you think would have won between Harry and Draco? See, Harry sort of came to
I've
Hogwarts
honestly never seen Draco to be greatly talented. He's not talentless. I just don't see him as being an equal to Harry at all.
That's definitely true. But I don't know, I think maybe we underestimate him a bit. Because, for example, like we were saying, look to how he was able to handle...
I don't know, I think he could kick Ron's butt.
But that's true, he could probably beat Ron. Ron's he's sort of a pushover, I think. I don't know.
Ron's a pushover.
But look at the Department of Mystery scene in Book 5, where Ron basically... He turned into a blubbering idiot with that whole brain thing, and...
Yeah, but that was because he'd been hit with a curse earlier.
Yeah, that's true. Well, people, send in your suggestions for this segment. Maybe we can evolve it into its own type of little game.
Yeah, I think what we should do is time it, like set it to like 2 minutes, where we go back and forth about it.
Yeah, for example, it could be...
And have some fast-paced music in the background.
Yeah, like on ESPN, there's that show Pardon the Interruption, where they spend like 30 seconds... I guess I'm the only one that's ever watched ESPN, you... Harry Potter dorks, but they spent 30 seconds arguing about like a person like Kobe Bryant or something. So we can do that exact same thing. Oh, and also, guys, one of the last thing I have to say is we want a freshen the remix for the beginning of the show. Take some clips out of previous episodes, funny little sayings, maybe a few of Andrew's yas, and sync them together and make us a new show intro. Right now we have the... what I like to say, the cracked out Hedwig's theme. A lot of you like it. It's sort of become our trademark. But come up with something new, and hopefully we can have it for episode 20. We can put it at the beginning, and it can be...
Episode 20 is going to be Christmas, so we're going to do something Christmassy, I think.
Well, then the next time we have a normal episode, we'll play it. So give us a new theme. Give us a new theme. That's all we have to say.
Then episode 1, I just had this great new idea. Episode 21. We should make it our goal to be the first new podcast of 2006.
Let's do it.
12:01 a.m. Bam, it's up. Let's do it. Because New Year's Day is a...
Sunday?
A Sunday. Yeah, New Year's Day is a Sunday. So it'll be good timing.
Let's do it,
It'll be out a little earlier.
Oh, so that's pretty much it. When you guys write those song parodies again, write one about BenChain.com and Emma and all that stuff and put them all together. BenChain.com.
So, on that note, I would be Andrew... Andrew Sims.
And I am everyone's favorite Kansan, BenChain.com. That's
you know,
that's
what
I'm calling myself. I'm calling myself BenChain.com from now on. Not even gonna... That's my new name.
And I'm Kevin Steck. Like the hesitation.
Without the dot coms.
With no special way of outroing myself, I'm Laura Thompson.
Aww. Oh, Laura, you're special because you're the only girl on MuggleCast.
Except
I don't know. Do you want an extra girl on the show, Laura? Do you need a...
You need a
Do I seem like
partner?
I'm having a hard time handling any of you?
Get Emma Watson on here. No. No, I'll do you one better. I'll do you guys even one better. Get Andrew's sister on the show. Come on.
She hasn't even finished reading book six yet. So she's not even
She's
here
coming on, dude.
To, although Yeah, although Yeah, my dad today, he was like, you should put back on the show. I think she'd be really good. I'm like,
dude,
no.
Me and your sister are going to have our first date on MuggleCast.
Okay.
Oh
well, now
God,
that I got this power book.
I'm so sorry for Andrew's sister.
That wraps us up episode 19. Wait a second. Have I been counting these wrong?
This is episode 19.
Episode 22 is 19. New Year's. No, but episode 22 is New Year's. I said episode 21.
Okay, sounds good.
But at any rate, we will see you next week for episode 20 with a special Brit, hopefully.
Well, Jamie, since the Muggle Nerds can be stupid and forgot to post your birthday, we decided that as fans, it was our duty to wish you one.
Happy birthday, Jamie!
Hey, MuggleCast! It's Meredith again.
And I'm our twin sister, Courtney, and we listen to y'all religiously from Kentucky. Just want to say that we love the show and keep up the great work.
And I have another message. It's not to any MuggleCast guys. You know who you are. You rubbed it in my face that you got on MuggleCast after sending in just one voicemail. Well, I'd like to say this is my third time, and if you combine this as Courtney's first time, we've been on a total of four. Yeah! No, I'm just kidding. So, we'll see y'all later.
See ya! Bye!
Hello, MuggleCast. Kelsey from Iowa here. I just wanted to thank you because MuggleCast helped me out during a 13-hour car ride to Colorado with my family. I listened to MuggleCast for the majority of the ride. MuggleCast was my savior. Thank you.
Podcast contest? MC contest? See, but
how about we just make something?
Let me rack my brain on this.
I want to make.
I thought of Spy on Sparts, and that hit it off, so.
No, you didn't.
No, you didn't.
I did too. I said, "Oh no,
you did not."
Guys,
you coined the phrase.
So anyway, we don't need to worry about that right now.
Eric,
how do you do
funny.
That so often?
I have your name set as on my Skype, so it says "des." Period. Okay. Anyway, sorry, Eric. You know I love you. It was just a joke, and then I left it as that. Okay. I think
that's gonna be the blooper.
Yeah.